You're listening to Packers Talk Network. PackersTalk.com.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Wasn't talking on my ass for once.
You were. You were. You just happened to get lucky.
Oh, well, yeah, but I don't get lucky often.
Check New York Bozo! New York Bozo! New York Bozo!
I'm going to go so angry Jim Rome on you, Brian. It's going to be ridiculous.
Jordan made some good points, and that was cute.
Who, me?
Well, you're real handsome. Your eyes look real nice today in that jersey, Brian. Tell you that right now.
And bring you some more devastation and more knowledge and more fun facts about...
Did you just promise
tonight
that we're going to go devastate all of our listeners?
Good evening, Packer Nation. Welcome back to another edition of Pack to the Future podcast. As always, I'm your host, John Jameson. Doing well this week. We're busy at work, but I'm a working man. Blue collar. Get it done. Packers suffered a loss this past week. There's controversy in it. There's moves that have been made. Covered tonight in this episode of Pack to the Future. Joining me tonight, Dusty Evely. I said your name right.
Almost got it. You almost got it. Hey, what's going on, dude?
And writer Thane is with us.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, writer Thane. It's good to have you, my man.
Thanks. Yeah, we finally got Brian up out of here. I honestly don't care who it is, but I'm glad
it's you.
This is
how I know the episode's going to be good. Mm-hmm. This exactly right here, because Brian's gone. We got an actual real intellect in Brian's place, Thane. Thane, I love the polls you do on Twitter. I'm just going to say that on air. I think they're great. Keep coming with them, because I enjoy giving my opinion silently, just the way you do it. So,
John, you have literally never given your opinion silently. I refuse to believe it.
On social media.
Okay.
Oh, when you get me right here in front of a microphone, words come out of my mouth that I don't even know what I'm saying. So it's a lovely thing. But Thane, you're having a good week, my brother.
Good week so far.
Okay. Work's okay.
Oh, great.
Work is always freaking fantastic.
How do you know I have a job?
I don't know that.
Me?
I mean, wildcard biatches?
Yes.
Maybe. But yes. Well, dude, like I said, thank you for joining us. And it's going to be the bomb diggity having you. Dusty Evely, how was your week, brother?
It's going good, man. You know, it's been interesting. We had the news today. There was news today, boys, that we're going to get to. So I don't want to, you know, get into that too early. But we're recording this on Tuesday, so it's the 30th. And we're supposed to be getting rain tomorrow on Halloween, which is kind of a total bummer. And so trick-or-treating got moved up to today. So unfortunately, my wife was working. But I got to take my two children trick-or-treating. And it was awesome. It's just the town I live in. It's a small town. They just shut down Main Street. My little daughter, was a Care Bear, and my son was a mouse. She was supposed to be Cinderella, and he was supposed to be Gus, and then she didn't want to wear the Cinderella dress at the last minute, so she got to be a Care Bear. The small town I live in, they shut down Main Street, and all the companies, like the businesses, they kind of sit out front and just hand out candy, so it's like Trunk or Treat, but it's down Main Street, and so we got to do that. We walked down, and my daughter saw a whole bunch of people. A bunch of characters she knew, like costumes, so she's waving. She's like, "Hi, baby Groot." Like, there's like celebrities. She's like meeting all of her favorite celebrities. It was awesome. It was a lot of fun
to
see.
So strangers are handing kids, your kids.
Yeah.
Candy out of their trunk?
No, in front of their businesses, their business owners. But I want to be very clear about this, John. I will be eating all of the candy. All of the candy is mine.
Why else do you have kids? That's the question.
This is, oh man, she's finally old enough to like kind of do it, dude, to be really cute. So they give her more candy, which means I get more candy.
I love it. funniest things I think I've still ever seen in my life was the first time Jimmy Kimmel did that I Ate Your Halloween Candy challenge. And some of those videos, man, still just wreck me to the day. Like, you're going to get a tummy ache, mommy. I'm like, these kids are just spewing gold right now. But dudes, we're about to spew some gold here. Some green and gold. Money nice. And Packers. Let's go. Nice. It's time for the patented coin toss segment, brought to you today by none other than me, and brought to you by none other than Sioux City Beef Jerky. Some of the best beef jerky you could ever have in your life. I would highly, highly recommend getting some. As Brian has said many times, it is delicious. The tundra teriyaki always, always fills you over. And I would get some. It's what I do. And I'd also get some more knowledge from Dusty.
Hi.
And Thane. Hi. And this week's Hello. Coin toss. Boys, what a couple days it's been. I mean, obviously all the action pretty much happened today, but you had what happened on Sunday. Kind of play a little bit into the cards today. Ty Montgomery, that's where we'll start today. Traded for a 7th-round pick to the Baltimore Ravens. I'm going to get you guys' thoughts on it. So, Dusty, if I flip the coin and it is heads, it was a good move. If I flip the coin and it was tails, it was a bad move. It's heads, good move, Dusty, to trade Ty Montgomery.
Yeah, I think it's a great move. I mean, this is I want to throw out there first. I've been a huge Montgomery fan since I drafted him. I've been of the mind that he is neither a wide receiver or a running back. He could be best used in kind of a hybrid role, and the Packers have never really, I don't think, utilized him to his full potential. Obviously, the ending of the Rams game this past weekend and kind of the report that came out afterwards, and Montgomery has now come back and refute that, so who knows what's really true. But I think it kind of ends his Packer tenure on a sour note, and I kind of hate that because I've always been a huge fan of the guy. That being said, it was time to go. Not just because of the move that he did this past weekend. I mean, you know, since he became a full-time running back last year he averaged 3.8 yards a carry, and this year he was averaging right at 4. We now have Jamal Williams and Aaron Jones, obviously, is the 1-2. So Williams is Montgomery is the number 3 running back on that team. That was still kind of getting, I mean, Jones kind of took over this past week. But for a while, Montgomery was getting more snaps than I think, well, no, he wasn't beating out Williams, but he was beating out Jones. So that kind of clears the backfield a little bit. He was clearly the number 3 as good as he was. And then you look at the wide receivers, and you know, it's Devontae Adams, and it's Randall Cobb, and now with the emergence of MVS and St. Brown, and Allison's had a great year. I mean, at best, he's the 6th best wide receiver. So I don't think Montgomery is done by any stretch of the imagination. I hope he does well in Baltimore. I don't think he will, because I don't think they know how to use him either. I wish him well, but just based on the talent at those skill positions that we have, I think it was absolutely the right move. I hate the timing, just because it ends his tenure in a sour note. I think he's been good throughout his career in Green Bay. He seems like he's been a good dude, but I think for this football team at this time, absolutely the right move.
Thane?
Okay, on the flip side, I guess what I'll say is the Packers did not get better today in trading Ty Montgomery. Ty Montgomery is a unique skill set at running back. Obviously, he brings something to the table that both Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams do not, and that's really basically in terms of being more of an elite scat back out of the backfield as a pass catcher, and really a chess piece that you could move out to the slot and you can do different things with. Not that he was the greatest runner of all time, which is kind of why he slid down the depth chart, but I really think he's a different skill set and you can do different things with him. Really, when he was in there, a lot of the time was 2-minute drill, things like that, but that's really when his skill set matched up with what we were trying to do. And I really think that taking him away from this offense, we didn't get better today. We didn't get a ton worse, but we definitely did not get better. And in terms of return, I guess you probably don't re-sign Ty Montgomery at the end of the season, but I guess I've never been a huge fan of trading players away for picks like 7th-round picks, because how many times do those guys turn into something like outstanding? They're all just a roll of the dice. Like, It's very, very seldom the seventh round draft picks hit, so you're not really getting a huge return on him. So honestly, I think that they're just taking away some skill from that position, taking it away a unique skill set and a chess piece, and really they're not getting much of anything in return. Really not getting anything at all in return. So that's kind of my stance on that.
Thane, I asked myself this question in my head pretty much when the coin flipped, and I was like, how are you going to like flip this as a bad thing that happened today? And you did a pretty dang good job at doing that. And for that, I must award you the point. Dusty, you were so money, dude.
How dare you? I know, so money, dude. But that's the thing. I know I was money. I'm so money, and I don't even know it is the problem.
Big blow money fast over here, dude. Well, Thane, congratulations. And we're moving on to the next thing, the next huge thing that happened, probably more huger than Ty Montgomery getting traded, is HHCD got traded. Clinton Dix is no longer a Green Bay Packer. And this one's got a little bit of feels to it as well, because not only was he like a guy that he kind of saw as being just like a really, he was a good player on the field, but an even better person off the field. And I think the community of Green Bay lost somebody today, and the Packers lost someone today too, but moves need to be made. And this is why I have you guys here to do this for me. And Thane, when I flip this coin, if it is heads, the Packers did well by trading away Clinton Dix. It is tails. The Packers should not have moved Clinton Dix.
Well, honestly, I think it's pretty obvious why they shouldn't have moved him. You don't have anybody else that's experienced at safety. You're already really, honestly, have a poor group of safeties to start out with. Clinton Dix was your only semblance of a decent safety, and now you have a big question mark as to who's going to fill his spot. Like, obviously, Kentrell Bryce is still your starter opposite whoever else, but do you really want Jermaine Whitehead or Josh Jones, who hasn't played more than like two snaps in a game this year, going in there? Like, I just think that, back to my point with Ty Montgomery, the team didn't get better today. It would be one thing if they traded him away and then they traded for somebody like Dante Fowler, who I know me and Dusty really wanted this trade deadline. Never really panned out for us, but I just don't think they got better today, and it's pretty simple. They didn't get better, and they got a fourth-round pick for him. I personally probably wouldn't have moved him for anything less than the third, but that's just kind of the way it goes with players on the last year of their contract. So you weren't going to get great return for him, and really you get a fourth-round pick. And if you think about it, as far as the compensatory draft pick formula goes, he probably would have gotten you a fourth-round comp pick anyway if you keep him for the rest of the season. So to me, you got worse as a team, and you probably only got a little bit better of a fourth-round pick in the comp formula. So I guess that's my stance on it.
All right, Dusty?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, man. This is a tough one to argue exactly for the reason that Thane kind of started off with, which is, who do you have – who do you have behind him? Who do you have to start? And right now, the depth chart, not that it means anything. The starter that they have currently at free safety is Jermaine Whitehead, who, I don't know, I don't hate Whitehead. I think he started out rough. He's been kind of a project, but I think he's kind of come on the past couple games. I kind of like what I've seen of him. I mean, obviously, he doesn't have the experience of HaHa Clinton Dix. He does seem, he seems to be a little more decisive at this point. That was the thing with Clinton Dix, is he seemed kind of hesitant. He's always playing, 25 yards off the line, which I assume some of that's the call. But his kind of read and diagnose, I think, was fine. He's just slow to attack. So Whitehead seems like maybe he's attacking a little more. Maybe that's what they wanted. Maybe Pettine was like, listen, I need that guy out there all the time who can attack a little more. And then behind him, you also have Josh Jones, who we haven't seen very much. He's kind of more your strong safety. You got Raven Green now as your backup free safety, who I thought really looked really good in the preseason. That's a guy I'm really excited about. I mean, he's, I don't want to hang all my hopes on Raven Green, but it, you know, I don't really hate Jermaine Whitehead and Raven Green kind of at that free safety role now. You also, that also opens some stuff up, man. You also have, you know, the possibility with these young guys healthy now, maybe you get Williams back there. Maybe Breland, who was brought in, maybe his timeout was just kind of a, listen, man, we're going to see if you can learn the safety position a little more, kind of looking forward to this. You know, ultimately Ha Ha Clinton Dix was a guy who was going to, he hoped command big money this offseason, and the Packers were just, they weren't going to pay him. And so you better move on too early than too late. I also want to kind of run through, I know this isn't overly fair since Ted Thompson is gone, but I'll run through some fourth round draft picks over the past handful of years. So this past year was Jamon Moore, who hasn't done a ton so far, but, you know, a ton of potential, and we're going to see what happens. I really like Jamon Moore. 2017, you had Vince Beagle. But you also had Jamal Williams at fourth. In 2016, you had Blake Martinez and Dean Lowry. 2015, you had Jake Ryan, Carl Bradford in 2014. In 13, they had three. They had Bakhtiari, J.C. Treader, and Jonathan Franklin. 2012, Mike Daniels and Jerron McMillan. We're going to forget about that second name. And I think as far as I'm going to go back, yeah, we'll go back to 2011, was Devon House. That's a really good track record of fourth round picks. A really good track record. I know he probably could have gotten more, but honestly, for a basically an 8-game plus playoff rental and a guy you're going to have to pay at the end of the year, fourth round isn't bad, especially with what the Packers have done. So it's less than ideal. You're trading the best or the most experienced guy in the secondary there, that safety position. But I don't know. The more I think about it, the less I hate it.
That's the unbelievable job, brother.
Thank you.
What you just did at the end with the fourth round draft picks, that like almost makes you feel like you just traded Clinton Dix for what is just another key piece to the defense. That was awesome.
Point.
It is tied up. And the final question, guys. I've been telling people I think that the Packers won in all aspects of that game on Sunday besides the final score. And I want to know from you guys whether that is a good loss or good loss or bad loss. So if I flip this coin, Dusty, that was a bad loss. Vane, good loss. Dusty, that was a bad loss, Dusty.
It's a bad loss because it's a loss. I mean, listen, I get the counterpoint. I understand kind of how this looks, that the defense looked really, really good, and the offense maybe started clicking a little bit, although the offense still kind of, you know, ran into some issues and kind of missing some guys and all of that. And they hung with, I mean, a team that honestly I thought was going to blow the Packers out. That I picked the Packers to lose last week for the first time in a very long time, and they ended up doing it, but I thought it had a potential to be a lot worse than it actually was. I understand all of that. But I look at the standings, you're still 3-3-1. You're behind the Bears. You're third in the division, behind the Bears, behind the Vikings. And without and not a great schedule coming up. I mean, you do have some teams on there that you can beat. But, I mean, you got the Patriots this week at New England. Then the Dolphins, who, you know, not great, and that's at home. But, the Seahawks have looked feisty. The Vikings seem like they're kind of turning around a little bit. The Cardinals are bad. The Falcons are always good. The Bears in week 15 are going to be tough. The Jets, and then the Lions. Like, there's only a handful of games that you can count as a win, and then even then, not that. You need all the wins you can get. I mean, coming out of a bye week, even though it's the Rams, you put together a great defensive, and you couldn't put together a full game of offense, and you still, like, being up only 10-8 at the half was just a frustrating struggle, and I get the Rams' defense is good, but I think just based on the fact that this was a loss and based on where they were sitting before the bye, I think they needed to come out. They need to come out on all cylinders. And whether that's a win or a loss, I don't know that it matters too much, I guess, if they looked really, really good on both sides of the ball for like the entire game. I still have questions about both sides of the ball after this, and they're sitting 3-3-1 heading into New England this week with a very, very real possibility of being 4-3 or 3-4-1 after this week. I think I'm very curious to see what Thane says here, because I can see all the points for it. I have a really hard time thinking of this as anything other than a bad loss, just because it's a loss and you're 3-3-1.
Thane, you just got called out, bud.
Oh man. All right. So I get the point. We have another mark on the loss column. That's a good point. You know, but to my point, look at how bad they looked against the San Francisco 49ers with a backup quarterback, a team that has only one win currently. I mean, they barely beat them. It took Aaron Rodgers some crazy heroics to get through that game, and they barely squeaked it out. And that is just not a good football team at all, especially with no starting quarterback in Jimmy Garoppolo. So then you go through your bye week and you come out and you play a team that basically I would consider they have one of the best head coaches in the league, probably top three offense in the league. They have players on defense like Aaron Donald, who's made a top three defensive player, and Dominican Sue, who's outstanding. Marcus Peters is a very good player. Like, they have a lot of talent on defense as well, in addition to having an outstanding offense and an MVP candidate at running back. So really, the defense was able to play a complete game, which is something we really hadn't seen from them at all whatsoever outside of the Bills game, which was kind of a little bit different because Josh Allen was their starting quarterback and their offense isn't really good to begin with. So they played a complete game. They didn't just come out in the first half and get blown up by this team that is the best offense they've seen all year. And then they played a complete game. They had great individual performances by players like Mike Daniels, Kenny Clark, Jaire Alexander on defense. And then on offense, granted they kind of stalled in the middle, they really saw some really great performances as well on the other side of the ball. From Aaron Rodgers looked really good for the majority of the game. Devontae Adams looked like a top five wide receiver for a good portion of this game. And really, Marquez Valdez-Scantling looked outstanding as well. So, I mean, you're in position to win this game. Honestly, I think that they have a better chance of winning the game than losing the game if Montgomery doesn't fumble that ball, because you give Aaron Rodgers 2 minutes to go down the field and get just a field goal, he's going to get you a field goal in four down territory. So really, I think, you know, really they showed that they can beat an elite team, and that's something that they really lacked showing when they played teams like the 49ers and the Lions. So that's how I'm going to spin it, as a good loss, I guess.
And Thane, I agree with you. I agree with you. Dusty, I will applaud your effort. And I,
your applause means nothing to me, John.
I know that. I need you to know that. And I do think that there are many, many, many positive things to take away from what we saw on Sunday. And if there is such a thing as a good loss, I think the Packers had it, and I think that they're going to be very motivated to start winning a lot of football games. And I think I'm praying that we are seeing a different team come this Sunday night when we head to Foxborough. Brady Rodgers could be one of the last times, and Tom Brady's schmoozing on Aaron Rodgers this week already, saying that he inspires him, stuff like that, blah, blah, blah. We don't care about you, Tom Brady. We care about what the Packers got to do to win this game on Sunday.
All right, guys. Like I said before, this is one of my favorite times of the show. It is my favorite. And it is the time I get to sit down with the opposition, hear what's going on their side of the ball, and just kind of gauge where our mindset should be going into this game. Very special guest tonight. We got Alex Shane. He is of Pat's Pulpit. It's an SB Nation site. Alex, thank you for joining us tonight. How you doing tonight, my man?
I'm doing great. Glad to be here. I appreciate having me on.
Dude, it's the pleasure is all ours. We are in the presence of someone who has covered greatness in their city for a very long time. And, I mean, man, you guys have had such phenomenal success. I mean, you guys, the Red Sox just won the World Series again. I mean, you guys just keep winning over in Boston. It's impressive.
No, it's funny. I do a podcast, a Pat's Pulpit podcast with Carl Reiterman and Rich Hill, and we were doing the podcast earlier in the week, and we were complaining about how hard it is to be a Boston fan because we're up so late every night watching these teams win these championships, and we were sleepy doing the podcast. These are the problems that we have over in Boston.
Man, there seems to be such worse problems to have, like, you know, dealing away the best safety on your team and being unknown about your secondary going into a huge matchup here. But I mean, we're getting down to the latter stages of Tom Brady's career, Alec. And
we are.
When you look at where the NFL has been over the last 7-ish years, I mean, there's been two names that pretty much always have struck up the conversation. That's Brady and Rodgers. And I mean, this could be potentially the last time we see them. I mean, would you say going into this game and just throughout their careers, is this probably the best quarterback matchup the NFL just throughout their tenure has ever seen?
Yeah, I mean, what I love about this matchup especially is you listen to Brady and Rodgers talk about the other quarterback, and it's like a contest to see who can praise the other guy the most. There's so much respect they have for each other, and there's such different styles of quarterbacking, too. You know, Brady's a pure pocket passer, very cerebral, not the most athletic guy on the planet, but he's able to make up for it with his football mind, his intelligence, and his arm, and his location, his accuracy. Then you've got Rodgers, who's just a very athletic guy. He's also very cerebral, very smart player, but he's able to make plays with his feet. He can extend plays. I think there are things that Rodgers has done in his career that Brady could never do and vice versa. So it's really fun to watch. Yeah. As a Patriots fan, obviously I got to witness the Brady versus Manning rivalry that happened over the years. That was a phenomenal one. And it's really too bad that Rodgers is in the NFC and not the AFC. Cause it's been really fun to watch Brady and Rodgers twice a year, or once a year at least, as opposed to once every 4 years. It really is too bad. This is only the second time they played each other. It's probably remarkable to think about.
And just to think what the Seahawks Patriots Super Bowl could have been if it was Brady Rodgers.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah,
that would have been dreams come true for a lot of football fans. But we got it this Sunday. I think it's going to be a phenomenal game. And I mean, here's the thing: what I think kind of separates the Patriots from most organizations, and that's Bill Belichick and what he's able to do coaching and just managing the rosters and stuff like that. And you guys went out and brought Josh Gordon in, who I view as, you know, an elite talent at that position. I mean, are we close to seeing a complete taking the roof off of this kid and just releasing him and seeing what him and Brady got?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, I think in terms of a pure, physically gifted, talented receiver, at the physical attributes, this is the most talented receiver the Patriots have had since Randy Moss. I'm not comparing Gordon and Moss at all. They're very different receivers. He's just like you're a big guy, a rangy guy, a good hands receiver that can catch the ball away from his body. We haven't really had a guy like him since Randy Moss. It's usually been the Julian Edelmans and the Danny Amendolas of the world that have been the smaller, shifty white receivers that have gone in there. But in terms of Gordon and Brady's chemistry, it's not quite there yet. There's a couple plays you'll see where Gordon sits down in the zone a little early and Brady leads him, or he throws into the dirt where Gordon should have come back. But there's also two or three plays a game where Gordon will make an amazing catch off his body, and it really shows the kind of preview of what's to come once these guys get on the same page. It's actually very optimistic in that usually a Patriots trade for a receiver, even in the offseason, sometimes they don't really learn the playbook that well. They can't quite get on the same page with Brady. They can't figure out the scheme. The Pats offense is not an easy one to learn. You look at guys like Chad Ochocinco, or Joey Galloway, or Doug Gabriel. They just could never quite pick up the system. Gordon is doing that, and he's a part of the offense now. He's not that monster that I think he could be as the season progresses into December and January, but he's getting there.
And you guys got a Wisconsin boy on your roster that's absolutely ripping it up this year in James White. And I think that's huge. That's been huge for the success of your offense so far this season. But I mean, I'm trying to focus in on what we might be seeing on Sunday, and I think a big mismatch, and it's pretty much a mismatch whenever the Patriots play someone, and that's Gronkowski. I mean, is there any way that he misses this game on Sunday?
It's a good question. He didn't practice today with an ankle and back injury. And if you're watching Gronkowski play this year, I think he's either lost a step, or in my opinion, he's still hurt. He's still nursing some injury, still coming back from it. He hasn't scored a touchdown since week one of the season, and his red zone looks have been very, very limited. And in the game against the Bills this past Monday night, he had a lot of one-on-one matchups that he couldn't quite beat. So I don't think he's really 100% yet. Again, I didn't practice today. I think he's still going to go, if I had to guess. But it's definitely a hobbled Gronkowski who is not the game changer that he has been in years past. I think he will be once the year kind of unfolds and the football games start to really matter. But the Packers are getting the Patriots a pretty good time right now in terms of injuries and health and overall kind of tone of the team.
And that leads us into pretty much the final question I got for you, Alec, and that is, what do the Patriots have to do to beat the Packers on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, the Packers' defense is very suspect, as you've already hinted at. I think their secondary is very weak. Ha Ha Clinton Dix was their best safety, and that creates a real big mismatch for Rob Gronkowski. On the flip side of that, though, the Patriots are very, very thin at running back. They have James White, who's that receiving back, a good mismatch for coverage linebackers, but they were running Cordarrelle Patterson out there Monday as one of their primary rushers. So they have very, very limited running back, and it really makes the offense very one-dimensional. So that's going to make a much easier game for the Packers in terms of having to respect the run game. They don't have to worry about stacking the box and leaving one-on-ones. If the Packers can get pressure with three and four guys and make Brady throw the ball a little early before he's ready, could be a very long day for the Patriots because they did not look good against the Buffalo Bills. They kind of had to – they needed a pick six to close it out, and the Bills is the worst offense in the NFL by leaps and bounds. So I think the Packers have a legit shot at this game, actually, because Pats are hobbled. They're limited on the run game, and Aaron Rodgers can make amazing things happen with his legs, with his athletic receivers. And so should be a good one.
Now, Alec, I told you before I wasn't going to put you on the spot, and that might be a slight lie. But this is the last question.
All right.
And that is, could you give me a score prediction?
Yeah, it's funny. You'd actually be happy to know. I actually, every year when the schedule comes out, I go through and I go win, 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 loss, win, win. I kind of have a prediction how the game's going to go. The season's going to go back in April. And this actually is a game I had slated as a loss way back when the schedule first came out. And based on how the Patriots played last week, based on their current injury situation, based on their running game situation, and based on the fact that Aaron Rodgers was denied a chance for some fourth quarter heroics last week, courtesy of Ty Montgomery, I think this is a scenario where the Packers are down 28-29 with Rodgers having the ball. He drives them down 31-29, late field goal to win it for Green Bay.
Oh my gosh, Alec. Okay, so number one, that's by far the best score prediction we've had from a guest to date. Not only because you picked the Packers to win, but you had details, man. Like you're like envisioning this right now. You're Nostradamusing it.
No, the thing is, I've just seen like how these games go, and the Patriots like they don't win games like this blowouts. They're not, it's not going to be 28-0 at halftime. It's going to be very tight, and it might be a scenario whoever has the ball last wins it. I can see either quarterback is very, very capable of a late game-winning drive. So I just, in my scenario, I have the Patriots scoring a touchdown, leaving too much time on the clock, and then Rodgers being Rodgers and getting them down. Yeah.
You got me excited, Alec. It's like
– oh, good.
This game literally comes down to, like, which absolute legend has the ball last between Brady and Rodgers.
Yeah.
And it's – That's what we're setting ourselves up for. And, obviously my end, I'm hoping the Pack comes out. You're obviously hoping the Pats. We're going to see what happens, my dude. But lastly, where can we find you on Twitter? And again, just give your website a shout out too, please, my man.
Yeah, great. Yeah, thank you. Well, it's patspulpit.com. We cover the Patriots nonstop there. We do podcasts. We do pregame shows. We're all over it. You can find me on Twitter at Alec D. Shane. However, my Twitter feed is very boring. I don't talk much about football on it. So you may want to avoid that altogether. And,
make yourself sound so appealing, dude.
Yeah. Well, again, I work in book publishing in my day job. So most of my Twitter feed is about books. So if you like to read, follow me. Otherwise, I'd follow Rich Hill on Twitter. He's great. I'd follow Byrne Busher on Twitter. The rest of the Pats Pulpit staff, they're fantastic. Great coverage. What I love being a Patriots fan on Pats Pulpit is you avoid all the BS. It's objective, legitimate debate and discussion, and all fans are welcome. So it's a really good place to be.
That's awesome, dude. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you again for doing this, my man. And
of course.
Who knows? Maybe we'll do this again sometime down the road, but you were awesome. And good luck to you guys the rest of the season at Pats Pulpit and the Patriots the rest of the season. And we'll go from there, my man. But I appreciate the time.
You bet, John. Thanks.
All right. Guys, that was Alec Shane of Pats Pulpit. You know what time it is. It's time to kick it back to the coverage of the green and gold. The 14-time world champs. Let's go!
And that's where Thane comes in. And Thane, what do the Packers have to do to beat the MF and Patriots at Foxborough this week? Give it to me, please.
I think it all starts on defense and really limiting what Tom Brady can do. And from what I've seen, and I've watched a lot of the Patriots this year, Tom Brady's really been struggling with pressure. And I think another thing I could point out that the defense did good the other day was their pass rush was way better than it's been in the past. You saw Mike Daniels and Kenny Clark really ramp it up. You saw Clay Matthews even get some pressure at times. So, and Kyler Fackrell had an outstanding sack as well. So I think it starts with getting after the passer and on defense and really just disrupting Tom Brady a little bit. And I also think that they should shade Jair Alexander to Julian Edelman for the entire game, much like they did against Brandon Cooks. I think that'll really help shut him down and minimize what they can do. But really the question mark on defense for them is definitely covering Gronk, especially with Clinton Dix not out there anymore, because I don't really know who they're going to put on him. If it was last year, then you'd put Morgan Burnett on him, but you don't have Morgan Burnett anymore, so I think that's a big question mark. So they really need to figure something out with that, maybe put Josh Jackson on him. On the other side, I think you got to establish the run. I don't think – I mean, the Patriots' defense isn't amazing by any means, but it's definitely good. So getting Aaron Jones the carries he deserves – he hasn't gotten more than 12 carries in a game this season. I want to see him get at least 15. I think it should be easier now that Ty Montgomery is no longer on the team. So, yeah. Establish the run, get after the passer, and really just protect yourself against Gronk at all costs.
And the fun part, man, what is going to be the score on Sunday?
Oh, you're really putting me on the spot.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. Welcome, Thane.
Aaron Rodgers is going to go into Foxborough.
Okay, I'm listening.
And win Preach. This game.
Preach.
31.
Preach.
To 28.
Preach.
2-0 against Tom Brady lifetime.
Let's go. That's what I'm talking about. That's the type of optimism we need to get this team freaking going right there. And, you know, we just heard what we have to do on the field. And, I mean, guys, the numbers don't lie. There's proof in statistics. Dusty has the numbers as to what needs to happen to win on Sunday. By the numbers. You can't fool the numbers, Dusty.
My first number is 2014.
Okay.
And that's the last time these two teams played in Lambeau. And who was there? Oh, it was me.
Okay.
It was me. I've been to like three Packers games in my life, and that was one of them, and that game was tremendous. That has nothing to do with this game, but it was awesome. It was great to be there, man. All right, so when New England has the ball, again, I kind of looked at Football Outsiders, their DVOA rankings. When New England has the ball, their pass offense, they've got the seventh-ranked pass offense in the league right now. And the 10th-ranked rush offense. They're good. Guys, I don't know if you know this or not. New England has a pretty good football team. I think it's just this year. They seem to have come out of nowhere, but they have a pretty good football team, especially on offense.
This is their first year being good, really, I think.
That's my understanding. Right now, the Packers pass defense. So, again, the Patriots pass offense is 7th. Packers pass defense is 17th. Now, that's for the season. I think what we saw this past week is a little more promising. Like what Thane said with Jair, what he did against Brandon Cooks was, good God, what was it, 5 pass breakups? Like that was preposterous. Just a ridiculous showing. With those guys healthy, that's a different defense. So 17th feels a little low to me, but that's where they are right now just based on the season. They have the 24th ranked rush defense. And again, the Patriots have the 10th ranked rush offense. So it looks like New England's got the needle is in New England's favor when they have the ball, which is not necessarily surprising. What I will say, what was promising about this past week is that the pass defense and the rush defense both look good. The rush defense looked really, really bad. They came out of the bye, they did something, and they looked more aggressive. They looked better this past week, even though, you know, they gave up a couple big plays. I don't think Gurley had a rush over 10 yards until the second half, which is pretty impressive. So it looks bad on those because, you know, it's not great. Again, New England's good, but I think it's a little more promising than that just based on what we saw last week. Now, when the Packers offense has the ball, they have the 13th ranked pass offense this year. It's really, really funny to me that we've been complaining, you know, about the Packers pass offense. They're not in sync. They haven't been good. They're still top half of the league. I mean, that's not great, but imagine being upset and complaining about an offense being bad and you're still above average. We're very, very lucky. the Patriots pass defense is 19th. So, I mean, that right there, that's a big one right there. So we're going 13th against 19th. Rodgers is moving a little better. Especially last week, it seemed like in the second half, they kind of went to a more, not really up-tempo, but kind of more quick passes, kind of reading where the guy was and getting that ball out quickly if they needed to on the perimeter. So I could see some of that, but it looks like the Packers offense should be able to move this week, which wouldn't be overly surprising. Their rush offense is fourth. Packers have the fourth-rated rush offense in the league, which I think will be better because now there's not Ty Montgomery in there. We saw Aaron Jones get the lion's share of the carries and snaps this past week. So if he's the number one and Williams is relegated to number two and Jones is absolutely getting more snaps than him, that rush offense, in my mind, better than fourth, just because Jones has been the best one. He's been limited so far. Patriots' rush defense is ninth. So they do have a good rush defense, but I think based on what the Packers have done with the run offense, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So it's no surprise to see that both these teams, the offense is better than the opponent's defense, quite handedly in a couple of those categories. So it should be a fun game. Should be a lot of points scored. I'm looking forward to it. The last thing I wanted to look at was just the Patriots' top target. Thane talked about Gronkowski. Gronkowski right now, he is responsible for 15% of their targets, which is pretty good. Do you guys know who their number one target is? You don't have to guess because I'm going to tell you. Their number one target is James White. So Gronkowski right now, Gronk has 15% of the targets, which is 44 targets. James White, 25.3% of the targets. He has a whopping 30 targets more than Robert Gronkowski does. He's absolutely their number one option. I mean, they've done so much this year is they try to kind of set up that passing to running backs. And I'd say it's a little skewed. You know, Edelman is third with 37 targets, and he missed the first few games. And Josh Gordon didn't come on until late, and he's got 31. So James White's the number one, but they are looking a little more at other guys. But White is still the guy that they favor a little more heavily. So I really liked what I saw to Blake Martinez this past week, and I think Oren Burks is going to be huge there. Gronkowski seems slower. Like, I'm concerned about Gronkowski because he's Gronkowski. I'm not overly concerned that he is going to kill them. I am concerned about what James White can do. But after seeing what they did against Gurley this past week, barring the one play, I think that's not a bad matchup. So Martinez and Burks are going to have to be huge in that facet of the game to kind of slow down White. And if they can slow down White, they can slow down this passing game. So that to me is the kind of the number one guy you want to look at. See, score prediction. I said there's going to be a lot of points. And then I looked at my score prediction. I don't think there's going to be as many points as I thought. I do think there are going to be some key stops. I think probably at least one turnover. I'm going to go Packers 27-24. Yes. So it's Thane did 3 points. I'm doing 3 points as well. It's just I've got them scoring just a shade lower, just a skosh lower.
All right, here we go. The Packers are going to go into Foxborough on Sunday, and they're going to win this game. And it's a combination of what they just went through and what I saw from the team. This team is going to come out fired up. And I'm telling you this right now, guys. This is going to be a fun game to watch for Packer fans because we've been in need of one of those for a while. And this one's going to be fun. And the score is going to be 34-27. But don't think for a second that that's any indication of how the game's going to go because the Packers are going to start off early and scoring is going to happen often. So let's go, Pack. Let's get the dub. Do what we all predicted you to do, and let's go for it. Final thoughts tonight, boys. Thane, we'll start with you, the guest of honor. Do you have any final thoughts you want to share before we close tonight, my main?
Well, I guess I'll start by saying that the end of the podcast is near, so you're going to want to go to SiouxCityJerky.com and order some jerky and support our fine sponsor. Oh yeah. Apart from that,
and oh yeah.
Oh, it's fantastic stuff. I've tried literally so many flavors. Little known fact, I was actually the one who brought Sioux City Jerky and Pack to the Future together. So
oh,
so yeah, nice guy. I'm pretty in deep in this, and it is some outstanding stuff. So you're going to want to try it immediately. So write it down on a piece of paper or something, set it next to you. And then once the podcast is over, then type in Sioux City Jerky on your Google browser or whatever browser you like to use and just go buy some. You
know? Don't just listen to us talk about it. Try it for yourself.
Try it for yourself. Exactly. Furthermore, you know, I'm really, maybe I shouldn't say upset, but I really wish I could have seen Green Bay at least make a move for somebody today outside of shipping away a couple players. Mm-hmm. It would have been nice. Like I said, you know, Dante Fowler, they really need somebody who can rush the passer on a consistent basis from the edge, and I don't think they really have that. Been really disappointed in Nick Perry this season, so I thought that was really disappointing. I guess another thing I would like to touch on is I know a lot of people out there on Twitter, things like that, are really clamoring for Josh Jones to be replacing HaHa Clinton Dix, but as I believe Dusty mentioned earlier, it's going to be Jermaine Whitehead. Like that's a fact of the matter, is he's going to be starting. It's not going to be Josh Jones. Josh Jones might get some opportunities that he wasn't going to get before, but it's going to be Whitehead, and it's going to be a lot of Whitehead. So got to get ready for that. Don't be mad if you don't see a lot of Josh Jones this next weekend. And really that's all I have to touch on.
All right, dude. Twitter, where are you at, brother?
I will be at Track on Pack, and be sure to follow my Worst Packers Takes account at Worst Packers.
That account, Thane, I keep meaning to tell you, that account is tremendous. It's money. Tremendous.
It's money.
Yeah, and the best thing about it is I don't really even have to come up with my own content at all. I just get it's all gets sent in, and then I just have to like put in quotation marks the stupid thing somebody said about the Packers, and then I just tweet it out. And
I'm dreading the day, Thane. I'm dreading the day that I show up on there. I think I've escaped so far, but at some point that's coming. So
why do you think I'm not on social media? It's because of you, Thane.
John saw that account one day, and he just started digging his own grave. He's like, I am getting the hell out of here.
just for fun, we should just go back into my like past tweets from like when I was actually active on Twitter and just worst take those puppies, because there has to be some just awful tweets back there.
I assume every week you spout some awful takes here, so just mind the podcast thing and it'll be fine.
So John, were you on Twitter back in like the Justin Harrell days? Because I would have loved to see what your take on him was.
Oh man,
future Hall of Famer, this guy.
I was like, yeah. I tell people this all the time, but like I'm such an optimist. So it's like every time the Packers draft a player, I'm like, yep, he's a Pro Bowler. He's taking us to the Super Bowl this year for sure. And I mean, it's about every single Packer. So that's just who I am. But I don't even know how I got to that.
Thane, I told pretty much everyone that would listen to me that Atari Bigbee was going to be a top five safety in the league for the next 10 years. But it's not recorded anywhere. You know, I haven't written it down, so you can't really dig that up. But yeah, I had some takes. I had some pretty bad takes.
You just willed that take back into existence. I might have to get onto the old Twitter and tweet that one up.
You know, toss it out there. I have an old blog that I have since made private. If it's on there, I'm going to screenshot it for you, and then I will send it to you.
I saw a couple fire takes about Kyler Fackrell in training camp last year that were really good.
Oh, there's a guy that follows me that loves Kyler Fackrell more than he loves his own mother, and it's just like, dude, it's not gonna happen. It's fine.
And then there's one guy on there, I forget his handle, but he is just like lukewarm Janice take god. Like the guy loves Janice. Like, he still to this day is like, play Janice. He would have been better than Davante Adams. You just never put him on the field.
I still get people that hit me with like, resign Janice and put him at safety, and I can't tell if it's true. Like, is that person serious? There's no way, literally no way to know that.
And there's definitely trolls out there, but yeah, this guy's definitely like full on Janice. I actually turned his tweet notifications on, so anytime he tweets, I get to see it.
Is it
so
Janice's burner account? Is it Jeff Janis?
I'm dying on air right now.
It could be. It could be.
That's amazing.
I think you might be onto something there. I really do. I need to check into that.
Yeah. See if you went to like Saginaw Valley State or wherever the devil was Janice went.
We all have that one Janice fan in our lives, you know? The one guy that just doesn't let go.
I've cut him out of my life, John. Those people, I don't need that kind of person in my life anymore.
Oh, man. I remember watching FSU tape of I'm I Carroll and just being like, yeah, oh my God. We got the greatest cornerback in NFL history right here.
Nothing has ever gone wrong with like a 5'6" corner that grabs all the time. Not a single thing, John. Not a single thing.
Oh my gosh.
How do you hold a man when you're wearing boxing gloves? How do you hold a man when you're wearing... I don't understand. I still don't understand.
Oh man, that was okay. We're back. We're back, guys. I took a little trip off into laughing LMBO world, but I'm back, and Dusty's here, and Dusty always has great final thoughts. And Dusty, what's the cheapest tickets this week? Let me just ask you that.
Man, listen, first of all, I'm like three for my last three in terms of calling the game. Like, I can't remember what it was a few games ago, but it was like, hey, this game might be good, and it was bonkers awesome. It was like a Colts game. And then the week after that was, this game's going to be garbage, and that game was garbage. And then this past week, do you remember what last week's was, John? The cheapest ticket last week, I've got it pulled up in front of me. You don't guess. I've got what, it. Was Bucks was it? Bucks at Bengals for $29. And that game was Jameis doing terrible Jameis things, and then Fitzmagic showing up and bringing him all the way back before losing on a last-second field goal. That was a really cool game. Like, that was a legitimately... And at the time, that's what I said, like, this game could be good. Like, you know, like, the Bengals have been good and the Bucks had their moments. I didn't think Fitzmagic was going to come out and do that. The Amish rifle is one of his nicknames.
How does he do that? How does that guy do that?
He's going to throw 6 picks in 2 games, and I'm so excited about it. It's going to be great.
Like,
it's going to be great.
That might have signified the end of Jameis and Tampa right there.
Listen, man, like, Jameis should have been done in Tampa a while ago. Like, he's... Aside from the fact that apparently he's a garbage human being, he's also just not that, like, all of the faults that he had in college, he has not tried to clean up. He's not good. He can make some really nice plays, and he does have, like, a decent football IQ at times, but, like, he's never going to be good. He's always just going to be what we saw. He's going to have good games and bad games. That's besides the point. I said that game could be good, and that game was awesome, and you could have gone to that game for $29.
We take you talking about the games and Nostradamus in them all the way for like a 5-minute tangent, bud. That was nice.
I know. I'm proud of myself every now and then, man. So this week, you know, I said all that. This week, the cheapest ticket for $27, you can go see Kansas City at Cleveland, and that game's going to be garbage. Like, if you want to go and you just want to see Mahomes, who just is doing incredible things right now, if you want to go watch Mahomes for $27 in Cleveland, you can do that. Like, that's kind of awesome because they're gonna win like 42-10 or something. Like, I love that Cleveland kind of cleaned house, but they did it in the most Cleveland way. Like, I don't know if you heard this. I read the story that Hugh Jackson was on his way to go fire Todd Haley, and they're like, hey, we got to talk to you about something. Like, they fired him as he was literally walking to fire Todd Haley, and then they were like, well, maybe Todd Haley's gonna be head coach. No, he got fired too. It's they got so much talent on that team, and maybe they'll be good in like a year or two. That team's garbage. And then they've done this whole upheaval, and they're going against Kansas City, and it's going to be just a dumpster fire. But you can go see Patrick Mahomes. It's going to be awesome. So $27. It hasn't fallen to single digits yet. It's a little shocking.
It has to be a record.
Yeah, it seems like you always get like a $9 ticket by now. It's been really, really strange. So I think we've had one. I think like maybe in week 4 there was like a really cheap ticket, and then everything since then been in the 20s.
Trump's got the NFL numbers booming right now.
Yeah, that's exactly what he's doing. That's exactly.
All right. I'm done being the idiot tonight.
Steam's just gonna come out of my ears here in a second. You short circuited my brain, John.
This is the part where Brian gets to and he's like, John, I'm gonna cut you off the show.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. He's saying that right now. He can somehow hear us. A second final thought. I didn't bring this up during numbers, but I was looking at it and I was like, oh, cool. Because I mentioned that there's going to be turnovers, and then I forgot to pull the numbers up in front of me. So Brady this year has thrown 7 picks so far through 8 games. Well, you know, last year he threw 8 all season. He's thrown 7 this year. He has his highest interception percentage since 2005. His interception percentage is 2.4, so he's throwing interceptions on 2.4% of his attempts. In 2005 was 2.6. Ever since then, he's not had one lower than 2.3. So he's thrown picks at a higher rate than he has before, and he's going up against a team that may be playing a little more aggressive. So that's why I was saying there might be more picks. Get one off Brady. He actually has had, so far this year, two multi-pick games. Back-to-back. He had them against Miami and Indianapolis. Two-pick games. I don't know. Just something to think about. Last thought. As I mentioned, we're recording. It is October 30th as you're recording. Spooky season's almost over. It's never over in my heart. But it's almost over. And so I'd be remiss if I did not mention this. I was trying to finish it before we did this podcast, and my children did not cooperate. But I'm on the very last episode. It's on Netflix. It's The Haunting of Hill House. It's I don't know if either of you guys have seen this or started watching it or whatever. It's based loosely on the Shirley Jackson novel, of which a couple movies have already been made. But this one, it's kind of you take a slow burn movie and then you extend it out over 10 hours, which I know sounds terrible, but it's not. you kind of get this family drama, so you kind of get to know this family, these adults, and then you get these flashbacks when they're kids and these terrible things are happening to them at Hill House, this haunted, terribly haunted house. And it's kind of calling back to them now. And so they're kind of dealing with that. You see what happened when they were kids. You're seeing what's happened when they're adults. So you kind of get this flashback, flash forward type thing. So you kind of get through the first four episodes, this almost these character studies of these five people that you're going to be following, these five members of the family. And then there's spooky stuff in there. But like it takes about four episodes to get it set up. And then from five on, it's just incredible. It's kind of scary. It's creepy. It's got a tremendous atmosphere. You actually care what happens to the characters. There's super unsettling moments. It's directed by Mike Flanagan, who I've been a big fan of for a while. He did Oculus was like the first one of his that I saw. He actually did the second Ouija movie that I enjoyed better than the first Ouija movie. He did Hush on Netflix, which is a home invasion thriller with a deaf woman. He did Gerald's Game on Netflix. He did Absentia. Like, pretty much everything this guy's touched has been incredible. And this series is no exception. So if you want to be creeped out, in fact, I'm going to read. This is a text. I have a friend of mine that gets spooked really easily, but he loves scary things. So he tried watching this with his wife. And he told me he couldn't because he got too scared. And then he kept texting me saying, okay, we're watching more of it. Like, dude, what are you doing? What are you doing? So they finished the series last week. His wife is very pregnant. And I want to read this text very he pregnant. Sent to me. Finished The Haunting of Hill House last night. Understandably, we were freaked out. I woke up around 2 a.m. and my wife was laying on her back, giggling like a schoolgirl, playing patty cake with something in front of her, and I can't wake her up. I have to shake her aggressively, and she finally wakes up, really annoyed, with no memory of what dream she was having. She stands up, goes to the bathroom, lays back down, and immediately is back asleep and starts giggling. Freakiest night of sleep ever.
What?
It's not out and out scary all the time. It's really creepy. It has a way of kind of getting under your skin. So if you want something kind of creepy, that's 10 hours of just pure atmosphere and just kind of incredible creepiness.
Stop that. That's
please watch The Haunting of Hill House.
That's that's like demon possession right there.
It's fun. Like it does it in a fun way, John.
So good, dude. I love it. Dude, you'll be proud of me, Dusty. I went to two haunted houses on Saturday night.
I am proud of you. I told you about my fear of haunted houses, haven't I, John?
You have not, no.
I actually wrote a short story about this. It's one of my biggest fears. It's not the haunted houses that scares me. It's the fear that there is an actual killer in the haunted house. That no one, it's like the beginning of Scream, like the opening of Scream 2. I'll be like screaming because I'll be being stabbed, and everyone's like, oh, look, it's part of the show. But it's not part of the show, and now I'm dead.
I popped my cat eyes in before I went in there and got my karate skills on lockdown. And anyone tried to mess with me, they were getting a swift karate chop.
Let me hear your hiss, John. Let me hear your hiss. That's not bad. That's like a rattlesnake, too.
It's the last. Anyway,
that's it. Okay, that's it for me.
You're on. You have so many Twitter accounts. I've lost track. So
I got two. I've got at Dusty Evely, which is kind of my main account, where I'll do football stuff and also dumb other things. And then I've got one All-22 Talk that is basically just clips of All-22 footage and just very quick and dirty kind of breakdowns of kind of what's happening.
All right, guys.
I stick to my Wisconsin sports primarily when I do my final thoughts, and I'm staying there, and I'm going to be staying there for a while, because right now I am just in love with what I'm seeing from the Milwaukee Bucks right now. We're the only undefeated team in basketball right now, which is awesome to say with just regarding how good the Golden State Warriors are. So, I'm not saying that they're better than them by a long shot, but all I'm saying is that what I've seen from my boys this year has just been nothing short of amazing. I think everyone is playing so well together. There's no reason for us not to be excited about this team, Milwaukee, because this team is special. I legit think that we can be the number one seed in the East, and I think that we could potentially make the NBA Finals. That's how good this team is right now. And I know early season, but this team just looks like they got some fire in their eyes, and it starts with Giannis. So, G, keep it up. Boys, keep it up. You're playing well. We love you. We're supporting you. Get the job done. Packers, get the job done. We need a dub from you. We've been in need of one for a while. A nice signature Aaron Rodgers dub. So much sweeter when you do it and you see pouting Tom Brady on the sideline and Bill Belichick about to pluck his hair out. Let's go. Let's get that done. I want to see those images on TV. We're Pack to the Future. We've always been Pack to the Future. You know where to check us out. Check out all of our amazing writers like Thane. Thane, thank you for joining us this week.
Thank you.
And boys, it's time. Let's get the dub pack. We're Pack to the Future. Thanks for listening. Tune in next week. Peace out. Go Pack, go.